record it to the cloud?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Recording in progress.
Good morning again, everyone. I wanted to lift up this future cover. So this morning, I thought I would revisit a very important topic in our practice together. And especially when we take time to sit, it's very helpful to think about the mind of awakening. So we need to remember that this mind of awakening is connected to all life and is present in every moment of our day. In Gakudo Yojinshu, Dogen Senshi, these are guidelines for studying the way they're kind of pointers to keep in mind about our practice, cautions. So Dogen says, first off, you should arouse the thought of enlightenment. You should arouse the thought of enlightenment. The thought of enlightenment is bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening. Citta means consciousness or mind. And this thought of enlightenment is fundamental to our practice. Bodhicitta is both the intention to awaken in our life and also a way to describe the awakened mind. The thought of enlightenment, we can think of the thought of enlightenment as a kind of turning point. We face our lives and we say, I want to wake up. I actually want to wake up. I'm not sure what that means, but I know I don't want to perpetuate delusion and suffering in this life. I want to live my life in a way that expresses the teachings and the practice. So I have a sense, each of us has a sense, that by orienting myself in this way, I'll bring greater sanity to my own life, into the world. So this is a kind of visceral feeling. It's a sense of orientation to true north. It's our compass. There's also a sense of depth to it. A way we know that there are depths beyond our knowing. And that's fine. We don't need to know everything. We think we do, but it's impossible anyway. So orienting in this way provides us also with a sense of calm, creativity, positive engagement. So in a sense, there are two aspects to bodhicitta. There's the fact that the awakened mind exists right now, and then there's the intention to realize it. These two aspects depend on one another. The awakened mind seeks realization of awakening. The awakened mind seeks realization of awakening. Our intention to express the awakened mind is an expression of the awakened mind. So awakening is not an end goal or an ideal state. It's alive in the everyday moments of aligning ourselves with awakening. When we let go of our grip, when we ease our hold hold on deluded notions, that's an act of awakening. We do this with an attitude of great respect and kindness. Harshness is a waste of time. It's an obstacle and it's a detour. So, let harshness go. If you let harshness go, you have a chance to discover real vigor, real dedication. In my experience, people often don't believe this. They think kindness is wimpiness. They think harshness is the real deal. I fell for that for years. But it's just not true. So you can either go out into harshness and spend a whole lot of time figuring this out, or you might consider taking my word for it. We do not need to have a clear sense of what enlightenment is to follow through on our intention to wake up right here in this life. In fact, such ideas might inspire us, and that's a good thing, but only if we remember that they're just ideas. Just ideas. If we get trapped in that, that becomes a major detour. We do not need to be able to see clearly the end of the path. In fact, there is no end to the path. What we see is this moment, this encounter, this relationship, this ache or pain, this heartache, this grief, this need, this joy, this act of generosity, this act of patience. What we know is our moment-by-moment path of awakening, path of awakening. So there's a famous Zen saying that you probably have heard. I've talked about this before, but I think it's well worth remembering, that we should not mistake the finger pointing to the moon for the moon itself. Has everybody heard this? Some version of this, maybe? So, this is important. It's an important teaching. One way of looking at it is to see darkness is delusion. The moon as enlightenment, and the finger as pointing towards the path. Finger pointing towards enlightenment. If we stare at the finger, we will never see the moon. We will never follow the path. We will stay put in our cozy, maybe smelly, nest of delusion and never venture out. And we will convince ourselves that we are practicing because we're studying the finger. Right? So, there you go. You get to know the finger, but you miss the point. So we need to stay aware of this tendency. We need to follow the path, give expression to our intention, live our bodhicitta each day. But there's another aspect to this saying that's not usually discussed in Zen teachings that I like a lot, and so I'm going to talk about it again. That is, first off, what's the best time to see the moon?
Nighttime.
The best time to see the moon is in the dark. It's difficult to see the moon in broad daylight. You can do it, but you don't see it nearly as well. In real dark, it's hard to see the path. if you've ever been, you know, like up in the mountains, like far away from city light, and there's no moon, you get to know what dark is, right? And you get to know that with time and patience, it's possible to allow our eyes to adjust and to notice what starlight is like. That starlight actually is there, but we miss it in cities. This is subtle. This is a subtle form of light. And we can see just a little ways down the path. But we can still do it if we have patience and care. Another thing that we can do in the dark is ask for help. You know, if we're out in the middle of the Sierras by ourselves, that might not be so easy. But that's another way of clear seeing, is to ask for help. But when the moon is present in darkness, when we have some measure of moon, we can find our way. When it's bright, it's almost like daylight. We see the finger, we see the path, and we see it by the light of the moon. So there's a reciprocal relationship between us, the finger, the path, and the moon. The finger points to the moon, but we see it by the light of the moon. And we see the path we walk by the light of the moon. We see the moon by the light of the moon. All of this takes place in the dark. Yeah? So enlightenment is the light by which we see our way in the darkness of delusion. And even when we cannot see the moon, it's still there, always, right? We know this. This is really important. We see what points to the path by awakening. We see awakening by awakening. So there is a stage in the development of children, which those of you that have children know really well, that if something is not visible to them, they don't think it exists, right? What is seen to them is their entire universe. There's no sense that things exist outside of their vision. And it takes time and experience to learn this. I don't know if I shared this story with you, but years ago, Shinju and I lived at the apartment building next to San Francisco Zen Center, and they used to have children come through at Halloween. Neighborhood children would come through, and we would dress up the hallways and everything, you know. And one year, Shinju and I saw these frog masks at a local store, and we thought, well, how cool would it be to put on our robes and sit at the end? We lived at the end of the hallway, and sit at the end of the hallway, and we had these, I don't know what they're called, but when we were at Tazara, they were wool things that you could pull up on your head, you know, kind of like sewn together, cowly things. So we got these frog masks, and we put them on, and we brought these wool cowly things up, and we sat down on the floor in our robes at the end of the hallway. So we looked like frogs. We look totally like frogs in our robes.
Yeah.
And we thought this was really fun, you know, and the kids came and we had candy for them, you know. But some little kids came and they were totally freaked out. Totally freaked out because what were these giant frogs doing sitting at the end of the hallway? And so one of them started crying. Poor thing. And we lifted up the frog mask and it's like, it's okay, right? And they were like, okay. And then we put the frog bags down again. We were scary frogs. Like, 1 minute to the next. I had studied this some. I knew something about it, but to actually see it, that we turn from these giant, big, scary frogs into people, and then back again, like this. So, we're kind of like children like that sometimes. Sometimes we see, and then we get deluded, and then we don't see. We don't see. And then we see, and then we don't see. And when we don't see, we forget that we see. But actually, we were people there all the time. We just had frog masks on, right? So we think sometimes, if we cannot see the moon, if we cannot see enlightenment, that it doesn't exist. We don't trust that no matter what, the moon is there. Our awakened nature is there. Through practice, we can learn that even when things are very dark indeed, the moon is there. Even when things are very bright, the moon is there. Even when whatever happens with the moon and the earth, and we can't see it, the moon is there. Our awakened nature is there. And this is only one way of talking about realization and awakening, but I think that's a helpful one. So let's look again at Dogen's statement. You should arouse the thought of enlightenment. You, first word, you. You, just as you are, not someone else, not someplace else, not some other perfect person. You, this one. You should arouse. So, you don't need to manufacture the thought of enlightenment. You don't need to produce it, try and produce it. You arouse it. Maybe like a sleeping cat, maybe a sleeping lion. You act to awaken it. It is already there, maybe sleepy, but there. So there is a sense of intentional action. But it is participatory. It is acting in conjunction with what is already there. There's a kind of particular kind of energy, intention, focus. Not anxious or aggressive, but respectful and awake. And we forget, and we come back. This is an orientation toward awakening and an alignment that is already awake. Dogen goes on to say that the thought of enlightenment has many names. Bodhicitta has many names. Depends on your perspective. You, moonlight, finger path, vision, response, all. One moment. Dogen says, this mind is the one described by the great sage Nagarjuna. Ron likes Nagarjuna. The mind that fully sees into the uncertain world of birth and death is called the thought of enlightenment. The mind that fully sees into the uncertain world of birth and death is called the thought of enlightenment. So we ask, what is it like to fully see the uncertain world of birth and death? Who is it that fully sees? we live at the intersection of form and emptiness. We live in a world that has depth and meaning and beauty, and which is not graspable by our ordinary minds. We construct theories about this. We see frogs. It's not the frog was not false. I mean, really, it wasn't really a frog, but you know what I mean. But it wasn't complete. Sometimes we think that if we see clearly, we will be freed from distress and pain. But that is not the way of things. To see clearly is to live in this world as a human, imperfect, foolish, at times, and at the same time, not different from the moon. Moon always there. The great poet Esau had many losses in his life. After the death of his beloved daughter, he wrote this very famous poem. The world of dew is the world of dew, and yet, the world is ever-changing, impermanent, vibrant, complex, living. We can know this. We can even deeply experience and recognize it. And we're humans. We are not saved from and yet. Nor, I think, would we want to be. Because this, too, is the mind of awakening. This is the moonlight by which we see our lives, by which we experience and respond to each moment. Living there is not easy. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes we play ukuleles and we sing. We care for each other. We have moments of deep happiness. But sometimes it's not. But it's always alive. So we cultivate this way of being. We sit at this intersection. We sit in the faith that the moon is always present. We don't know what this means. We can be in the dark. We can long for understandability. But what we have is the whole picture. So we must not keep our focus on the finger pointing to the moon. We remember that we see by the light of the moon. What's that song? I'm terrible. By the light of the silvery moon. What is it? By the light of the silvery moon. Anybody know the next line? It's like an old song.
I'd like to swoon.
What?
I'd like to swoon.
I'd like to swoon?
Yeah. It's a love song.
It's a love song. Wow. Well,
with my honey in June, I think.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, practice is a love song. So let's get busy. We live at this intersection. Finger, moon, moonlight path, body, breath, wandering mind, distracting emotions, inconvenient relationships, too many responsibilities. It's all there, the whole package. And we sit in it, and we act in it, and we respond to one another from it. So this is the way we live together. Okay?